everyone, and welcome to the Planet FM meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6. My name's Judy and I'm an alcoholic and we'll be chairing our meeting this morning. Could you please help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thank you for joining us this morning. Today our speakers are Mark, Carly and Jim, and they will be sharing on their experience, strength and hope. Would you like to start sharing, please, Mark?
Yeah, good morning. Thanks, Judy. My name's Mark and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the SOS Big Book Meeting on Tuesday nights, and that's in Birkenhead, starts at 7:30. Very grateful to be sat here and an opportunity to do service, so thank you for inviting us, Judy. Service is a big part of my program, you know. How I served myself before Alcoholics Anonymous was very selfish, you know. I was a very selfish person. I didn't know any other way, you know. I grew up, you can probably tell by my accent, growing up in the north of England, and you know, it did feel like survival, you know, early childhood. You know, I was one of those that always felt like I never fitted in, or I never felt like everybody else looked. You know, everybody seemed to enjoy life and get on just fine, whereas I always felt like there was something wrong, you know. And that's not to blame anything. I you know, I can go through that blame game, but that's just how I felt, you know. It wasn't a bad childhood. It was a really good childhood, loving parents. You know, we weren't rich, we weren't poor, we were just pretty average. But I didn't feel right, you know. Then at the age of 14, introduced alcohol, and that made everything right, or seemed to, you know. All my troubles went away, all my woes went away, that socially awkward, you know, I could talk, have friends. It really did change everything, and that's a powerful thing at such an early age, and of course it influenced and set a path for me, for the next 30 plus years. I was one of those, you know, alcoholism, which I now know is a disease I suffer from. It was a progressive disease. I drank for fun for many years. You know, that was part of growing up. In England, you know, you were the odd one out if you didn't go to the pub. But here's the thing, you know, at the end of each night, those early signs were there. It wasn't every day, but at weekends at first, you know, they'd call last orders. And the last orders involved me not just getting a drink, but also getting spirits as well. So it was, you know, that was, and that's where I realized that quite often I was drinking, I heard this phrase, I was drinking for voltage rather than vintage. And I heard that phrase the other day and it really resonated with me and made me think back to those days. You know, it was, am I going to finish the night with a beer at a couple of percent, or am I going to go full on and get some spirits and really do the job? And that was essentially what I wanted to do. Drinking to oblivion, drinking to blackout. You know, and like a lot of people, that was where those early signs of alcoholism, you know. But I didn't understand it. I didn't even know I was an alcoholic. I got to New Zealand and you know, at that point I was drinking daily. But it was just in an evening. And I don't know where that invisible line, Judy, I crossed an invisible line into what we term as chronic alcoholism. You know, I couldn't wait to get home and get a drink, you know, so that was my permission to pick up a beer was when I got home from work. So what do you do as an alcoholic in chronic alcoholism? You finish work earlier and earlier and earlier, you know. And then I realized, you know, there's a bottle shop just down the road from work, and that led to lunchtime drinking. And at some point it was that morning drink. I picked up that morning drink. So basically I was drinking a function. There was no fun involved anymore. I was drinking purely for function. Couldn't do anything without drink, you know. And that's we describe it as you know, in a pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. That's certainly where I was, you know. Waking up, the guilt, the shame, you know, and I simply couldn't. I couldn't do life without it, you know, and I was, by this point, I'm physically dependent as well. And, you know, introduce treatment centres, you know. I didn't do the Alcoholics Anonymous thing at first. I went straight to a detox centre and then into a treatment centre where I didn't want to stop, you know. I just wanted to be able to drink better, you know, or drink like everybody else, responsibly, they call it, and that never happened. You know, as soon as I picked up a drink, we suffer, you know, from a disease. It's a physical allergy coupled with an obsession of the mind. So if I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking. Then as soon as I picked up a drink, I couldn't stop. You know, the first drink wanted a second, the second insisted on a third, and the third demanded a fourth, and so on. And it just would not end. So coming out of that first treatment centre, yep, I managed to get a few weeks up. But I had no program, no sponsor, no steps, no defense against the first drink. So I drank pretty much straight from coming out of that treatment center. At first thinking, I can, you know, it's going to be different this time. It's going to be different. I'm going to be able to control my drinking. And I couldn't, you know, and I was in a worse place within a couple of weeks than I was before I went in. So it was back to another treatment centre, and this time I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous properly, you know, and I listened, and I actually admitted to my innermost self. I'd got to that jumping off point where I couldn't face life with alcohol, and I couldn't face life without it either. And I mentioned earlier how powerful alcohol was in my life. It required something equally as powerful to have that, to treat my alcoholism, you know, and to step on. As described in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I was powerless over alcohol. I had to admit that to my innermost self, 100% surrender. And that my life was unmanageable. It's always been unmanageable, you know. So, and that was the start of my journey. That's when I started Alcoholics Anonymous. Listening to people, going to meetings, listening to people. They told me to get a sponsor. I had so much fear. I was fear and confusion was probably the main thing. So I got a sponsor after 4 months. I don't recommend that. But once I got a sponsor, we started the steps and slowly worked through them. And life began to change. Life began to change in a way that, you know, I was no longer my own worst enemy, because that was me, you know. I was a creator of my own confusion. All my problems really were of my own making, and alcohol surrounded all of them. So when I stop causing problems, you know, life does get better. Life does get better. And, you know, and slowly I started to trust AA. I started to listen. And it was a result of results for me, you know, a spiritual program. For spiritual progress, I have a God of my understanding today, a power greater than myself. You know, that starts in the morning with prayer and continues through the day, you know, and tuning into what I call the beam of AA or the beam of spirituality, and keeps me out of trouble. And I live a fantastic life today. You know, I really do. So, you know, if you are thinking that you've got a problem, get out there and get to a meeting. You know, listen. Talk to people and find out, you know, if you don't know what the problem is, you can't work on a solution. You know, that's my experience. So thanks for the invite today, Judy. And thank you very much for asking me to share.
Thank you so much, Mark. I have to make an apology to everyone listening. I forgot to read out our AA preamble at the beginning of the meeting, so I'll read it now. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Again, my apologies for not reading that at the beginning of the meeting. I'll now hand it over to Carly, who's agreed to share with us today. Thanks, Carly.
Thanks, Judy. Carly, alcoholic here. My story began in AA. 8.5 years ago, I came into AA. That's when a lot of people started questioning my my drinking, and they said, "I think you've got a drinking problem. I think you need to sort it out." So I got myself into AA. At the time, I was listening to other people's stories, and I thought I just wasn't as bad as them. But 8 years coming and going, in and out of AA. Thinking I didn't have a problem, I thought I could control this drinking, but it soon I began to realise I just couldn't control it. I tried switching drinks, drinking on different time, days, hours, even counselling and self-help books, you name it. I tried pretty much everything, but I just couldn't control my drinking. And the more I drank, the more consequences added up along the way. So I always used to hear in AA that, you don't need to wait for your rock bottom. I didn't take that seriously enough. I thought that happened to other people. So I was just coming and going, floating in and out. But I just didn't want to listen. I didn't want to admit I was an alcoholic. I knew I had a problem, but I just didn't think I was bad enough. All those years coming and going, they used to say in AA, they talked a lot about institutions, suicide and jail. I thought that stuff happened to other people. Sooner or later, the alcoholism took everything away from me. It took my child away from me, and it was ready to take me. In the end, I couldn't work. I was a liability. I couldn't hold down a job. So the alcoholism really sped up in the last stages of my alcoholism. I know I was in big trouble. I woke up in a police holding cell. I'd finally hit my rock bottom. I knew I had no way. I couldn't keep on like that. I only had two options in the end, was to keep on drinking and die from this disease or get sober. So I built the courage up to get myself back into AA. So that's what I did. I always used to hear people in AA, they used to say, just keep coming back, which that's what I did. So this time around, I had to get real. I had to admit, I was powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. And that was the first step for me to actually, to admit that and get myself back into AA and surrender to the program and start listening to others. So hear the old timers, they say, take the cotton wool out of your ears and stick it in your mouth. And that's what I did. I listened this time round, and I did the suggested things, what I was told to do. I got myself a home group. I read the big book. I got myself a sponsor. I do service. And they say service keeps you sober, which is, definitely has, so that's what I did. And very grateful alcoholic. Like I said, you don't have to wait for your rock bottom, because, it certainly catches up on you eventually. It's just a one day at a time program. I go to daily meetings because I can't stay on yesterday's sobriety. This is a deadly disease, and it has to be taken seriously, because, it will take us all out if we don't get serious with this disease. And it is a life and death program, and it works if you work at it. And, yeah, thank you, Judy.
Thank you so much, Carly. Right, we'll hand over to Jim now, who will share his experience, strength and hope. Thank you, Jim.
My name's Jim, and I'm an alcoholic. I suppose a good place for me to start is somewhere at the beginning. I was born in the UK, in the south of England, in Cornwall. And Mum and Dad had a pub, so we lived upstairs, and Mum looked after the guests with bed and breakfast and stuff. I was in a, I guess, in that environment. My first experience with alcohol was at Mum's birthday, and I was 9 years old. And I made my way around different tables, and at that time there was a drink called Baby Sham, which was quite palatable to a nine-year-old, I thought. Tasted a bit like lemonade. So I was sneaking these left, right and centre, and I thought I was sneaking them, but I've no idea people knew what I was doing. And got pretty drunk, fell over and vomited everywhere. So that was my first experience with it. But nothing else happened for a long, long time. We came to New Zealand in 1961, and life progressed. We moved to the far north, and I had my first introduction then, I suppose, to drinking. But no problems. It wasn't until I found myself later on in a particularly, what I thought at the time, fortuitous position, because I didn't have to work, and I had a lot of money, a good deal of money, which was a very bad combination for me. And I look back, and the slope was slippery, and I went on it and got myself into some scrapes, I suppose, you could say. Other people were kind of recognising it, and I suppose I was too. In deep inside me, I knew that what I was doing wasn't right. The drinking, and when it progressed to everyday drinking, I think that was the turning point for me. That was when I crossed the line, and really it became out of control. And someone mentioned before about controlling your drinking. I didn't hear of that until much later on, but that was something that really I don't think I'd have any chance with, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's a chemical and it's in your blood and it does something to some people. And as Mark said, one's not enough, and one's too many, and a thousand's not enough. And also, it wouldn't appeal to me to have to think about, I've had one beer, I can have a glass of water now, or I can have a glass of wine and two glasses of water, and the next hour I can have it. That just wouldn't appeal to me at all. It's far easier for me not to drink. It's far less complicated. And I have to say that since I've been sober, the things I've done, the places I've been, the things I've seen, absolutely, they're dead right in AA when they say things will happen beyond your wildest dreams. And that's exactly what's happened and continues to happen. And I'm excited about what's around the corner. Life now is way, way better. I thought when I was drinking, yeah, I had a pretty good life. But, you know, there's an old saying in AA that when I was drinking, I wasn't always in trouble. But when I was in trouble, I was always drinking. And that's the wonderful thing I find with the AA Fellowship, is that it's tailor-made for people who have a problem with alcohol. The answers are here. If you just leave yourself open to the messages and go to meetings, this is what I tell myself. Go to meetings, be regular about it, and listen and read and take things on board. And it's amazing what you will find out about a lot of things and about yourself. So I'm happy with that, and I hang my hat on that. If I keep coming to meetings and I don't pick up that first drink, I've got a chance. So thanks for asking me to share, Judy.
Thanks, Jim. That's great. Thank you. Siobhan, would you like to share for 5 minutes?
Hi, sure. Thanks, Judy. I'm Siobhan and I'm an alcoholic. My story started, like most other people, when I was quite young, feeling like I didn't fit into my peer group, and started drinking around the age of about 14. My drinking was always really different to everybody else's. I was always the last person at the party. I would often still be partying 2 or 3 days later, even from a really early age, and drank spirits from quite an early age. My parents and my grandparents were all alcoholics, so I'd watched, grown up watching the way that they drank, and the way that they drank was to start and never stop. And they were also daily drinkers, so I was always really used to everyone in my family carrying around a drink in the in their hands from, you know, from the time of around about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I never grew up in a household where someone didn't have a drink in their hand. And so when I continued my life, having a drink in my hand every night was really normal. It wasn't until I was forced into sobriety some years later and lived with a person who was sober, who didn't carry around a drink, that I actually found that that wasn't actually a normal behaviour. And for me, that was really eye-opening. But my journey took quite a while to get to that point. I tried to go to CADS at the early age of about 19 to control my drinking, and they gave me steps like 4 minutes, four drinks 3 times a week so that I could try and control it. I went again when I was about to get married, and then when I had my best children, asking for help and, you know, various alcohol agencies that would help me to control my drinking, so that I could look after my children well. And, you know, fortunately, during the birth and my children growing up, I was able to easily stop drinking because I had a reason not to. But as soon as things became stressful again later on in life, when I had time on my hands and the kids started to come a little bit more manageable, I guess, and able to manage themselves, the 6 o'clock or the 5 o'clock wine would come on. I would be looking forward to that as soon as I was thinking about making their dinner, and I'd just be having a glass of wine as I cooked dinner. And I specifically remember the time that it was the middle of Christmas holidays and I was really tired of looking after them, and I had a gin at around about 2 in the afternoon and thought, oh dear, like all the kids' parents are going to come and pick them up and I smell like gin, that's going to not go down well. And I would specifically remember that as being part of, you know, the beginning of a turning point for me. And then other turning points, you know, were times where I did pick up that first day drink and things rapidly became unmanageable. So I had tried everything. I ended up going into a rehab after going into hospital with some organ damage, some liver damage. I'd been sick for a really long time and lost a lot of weight. So by this stage, my drinking had actually affected my health to a point that they told me that if I didn't change it, that I might die. And everyone had been wondering what was wrong with me. I went from hospital to a rehab where I was introduced, first of all, to AA by one of the therapists there who thought that it might be helpful for me. And it wasn't until I came out of the rehab and relapsed very quickly that I went to my first meeting. I remember standing across the road being very petrified, and And I went in and everybody was really welcoming. They made me feel at home as if, and then I listened to their stories and they were all exactly the same as my story. So I felt comfortable right from the get-go in that I was in the right place, and I felt less embarrassed about what I'd been through because it had been such a shameful secret, hiding it all the time from friends, family, loved ones, children. So in AA, I felt at home for the first time. I could share my story, and sharing my story, I started to learn that there was recovery that was possible from watching what they did, and I just continued to attend meetings on a daily basis. Really happy to be sober. I know my family certainly are very grateful to AA, because it has been the only thing that has helped me. So I think it's worth giving everything a go. Thank you for asking me to share, Judy.
Thank you so much, Siobhan. That's all we have time for today. So thank you to Mark, Carly, Jim and Siobhan for joining us in the studio today, and to all of you for listening. We are on the air every Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. here on Planet FM 104.6. If you wish to speak to someone directly, please call 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757, or go to the AA website at aa.org.nz, where you can find a whole raft of information. And now, could we all please close the meeting using the Serenity Prayer? Thank you. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thank you, everyone.